Welcome to Rehash, a Web3 podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Rehash, a Web3 podcast. I'm your host, Diana Chen. And today we're speaking with Satvik Sethi, co-founder of Join Circle, all about SocialFi, mental health, and fundraising in Web3. But before we dive into our conversation with Satvik, here's a quick word from the Web3 projects that helped make this season possible.
Web2 Social has become a world of walled gardens, where platforms own your data, your content, and your community.
But Lens Protocol is a community garden, a user-owned, composable, and decentralized ecosystem designed to let Web3 social apps bloom.
When you create content on Lens, you own it, you control it, you take it with you from app to app, and you decide how it's monetized.
Instead of chasing ads and algorithms, you set the value of your work and your community collects it directly from you.
Here at Rehash, we'll be experimenting with this ourselves by posting all content from season 3 on Lens, where our community can now truly interact and grow with us.
So bring your photos and videos, your GMs, and your friends, and come join the new era of social media on Lens Protocol.
Go to claim.lens.xyz to claim the last social media handle you'll ever need. And be sure to follow rehash.lens.
Contributing to a DAO can feel like this. Contributing to several DAOs can feel like this. But it doesn't have to. With Avenue, you can filter out the noise, get to know more DAOs, and start contributing right away. Avenue allows contributors to form organic teams to work together on the things they love. This means DAOs can operate, coordinate, and collaborate at a scale that used to be impossible. Because working together in a DAO should be like making music. The drummers drum, the singers sing, and when collaboration leads the way, a song emerges. No more relying on the core team to get things done. It's time to get your community contributing. To give your DAO the information they need to know, the tools they need to self-organize, and the spaces they need to work together, visit avenue.place.
Hey guys, thanks for hopping on here. I just wanted to touch base real quick.
What's up, Diane?
What's up? So first of all, I just wanted to say thanks, Tyler, for taking these meeting notes. They look great.
I didn't take those. I'll take credit for it, though.
Wait, that wasn't you. Do we know who it was? And who's been posting those hilarious meme videos on our Twitter?
Oh, I have no idea. There's a lot going on here, though. Like, how are we supposed to keep up with what everyone's doing?
I don't know. It feels like pure chaos being in a DAO sometimes. Ellie, what was that thing you were talking about that helps DAO contributors like add and organize all of their contributions?
Oh yeah, it's called Govern. It's like GitHub for DAO contributors.
Ooh, that sounds cool. How does it actually work?
Yeah, so it's actually a protocol where DAO members can add any task they've completed as a contribution. And then their fellow DAO members can attest to them to confirm that those contributions were valid without the need for a core team to do so. What you end up with is a simple bottom-up way for members to build out the DAO's contribution graph themselves. It gives contributors more power and freedom, it makes it a lot easier to accurately reward everyone. DAO members actually own all of their contributions, so if they want to jump into another DAO, they can actually prove they know their stuff.
Okay, I'm sold. Can it be on-chain?
Of course, but on Gnosis chain, so transactions are super cheap.
Ooh. All right, yeah, I'm down. Diane?
Yeah, for sure, let's set it up. What's the link, Ellie?
Just go to govern.app, and that's govern without the E, so govrn.app.
Perfect. All right, well, if you guys got this, I gotta jump back to another call.
Hey, Satvik, how's it going? Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Diana, thank you so much for having me. Really excited to be here.
Of course. Thank you to our DAO members for voting you on. I'm so excited to speak with you. I've been following you on Twitter for quite a while and have just been really impressed by a lot of the tweets that you put out there. And I think, you know, our topic today, the things that we have to talk about are super important topics to talk about in this space. So I'm super stoked. But before we get into all of that, can you just tell people a little bit about your background for anybody who isn't familiar with who you are?
Sure. Yeah, I'd love to. So I'm Satvik Sethi. I'm actually a first generation immigrant. So born and brought up in India and then moved to New York for college, where I double majored in leadership and consulting and management information systems. So super business school and, you know, a bit of tech inculcated into that. Throughout college as well, I was pretty interested in social impact. I turn into a mental health activist and a social entrepreneur throughout college. Did a lot of really cool stuff around the world for mental health. And then last year, I joined Web3 as well as moved to London to continue all my journey, but now more so in the Web3 space and trying to inculcate my learnings with mental health and social impact, but into Web3.
So how did you get into like this space of mental health, social impact? I find it fascinating that you did so much work around mental health, even when you were in college, because I think at least speaking from my personal experience, when I was in college, my mental health was probably the worst. It was just bad. So A, like I'm really impressed, and B, I'm curious, how did you get interested in this field and get so, I guess, well-versed or become so self-aware about mental health at such a young age?
Sure, yeah. So this is actually the answer to this question is something that not a lot of people in Web3 even know about. But my experiences with mental health go back all the way back to when I was a child. So when I was in middle school, it was a time when myself and a lot of my peers around me were starting to experience mental health problems for the first time in our lives. You know, going through things like social anxiety or bullying or things like that, that were really playing on our mental health. But obviously at the time as kids, you don't really know that these are mental health problems. To us, these were just challenges that we were facing and we wanted to try to help out and support each other. Especially being in India, you know, mental health was and continues to be such a stigmatized topic. And there's a lot of taboo in society surrounding mental health. But somehow I just became someone for a lot of my peers around me that they could reach out to for help whenever they were struggling. And they started talking to me about their mental health, and I just kind of became that safe space for them. Around the same time, I think I just signed up for Instagram. Still, Instagram was kind of in its early days, just starting to gain popularity. And I was just up one night searching for poetry and quotes on Instagram using the hashtags, and I accidentally came across an image of someone salt farming. And as like a middle schooler, I was super taken aback by it. But at the same time, because I was, you know, helping out my friends struggling through similar problems, I just reached out to this complete stranger who at the time turned out to be this 15-year-old girl from Sweden. We ended up having a great conversation. We spoke about our lives, our cultures, you know, a bit of everything, and just kind of became these internet friends. And over the course of the next few years, from middle school all the way to when I got to college, I continued to actually reach out and help strangers online through Instagram and, you know, other social media platforms, Tumblr, even Twitter. And by the time I got to college, I'd spoken to over 400 to 500 strangers from around the world and helped them through their mental health problems and learned a lot in the process. So when I got to college, obviously as an international student, it was a really challenging time for myself. Like you said, you know, a lot of mental health problems started to compound for me. I was feeling homesick. I was dealing with social anxiety. I was going through depression, being away from home and my family for the first time. And at that point, I realized that I just couldn't keep up doing this, like helping strangers online, because I needed to help myself first. But at the same time, I knew what I was doing was so powerful and I wanted to continue it. So I created a social venture in college called Runaway, where we basically, I brought together tons of volunteers from around the world. At one point, we had over 200 volunteers from around the world. And we provided free mental health resources for young people and hosted tons of educational events on college campuses around the world as well. And through this, I got to work with organizations like Mental Health America, UNICEF, World Health Organization, to actually not just learn and own in on my own mental health skills and knowledge, but also actually influence mental health research and mental health policy from different lawmakers across the world to actually help young people find more resources and support. So yeah, it was definitely a really long and interesting journey, but I think we were really able to help a lot of young people throughout the way. And hopefully, you know, that's my goal. As I always say, my personal mission has been to make the world happier. And that's something that I want to continue to do regardless of whether I'm in this really core mental health activism work or even now, you know, being part of Web3.
That is such a cool and inspirational story. I think, you know, when most people think about high school kids on Instagram, they think of Instagram as, and social media in general, as more of a stressor to
kids' mental health than something that helps. And so it's really cool that you were able to use a platform like that to actually help people with their mental health instead of make it worse, which is what it seems to do most of the time.
Yeah.
As you got into Web3, how did you observe, you know, people's mental health in this space as compared to, for example, like on your college campus when you were working in those activism groups and working with college students?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, I mean, one of the reasons I got into Web3 as deeply as I did was because last year when I was exposed to Web3 for the first time, I was still, you know, my Twitter was very mental health focused. I was on Clubhouse, which was very mental health focused. But the more my social media started coinciding with Web3 social media, the more I started to recognize and see a lot of people talking about the challenges that existed in the Web3 space. Like, there was a lot of mental health burden that people were going through because it was kind of like a gold rush, right? Like, everyone at all times felt that need to stay online because new projects were constantly coming out. Money was being made everywhere you looked. And so people felt this inner stress and pressure to always be available. And there was this misconception that if you weren't available 24/7, you just weren't grinding or hustling hard enough. You know, so the opportunity cost of essentially not caring for your mental health and instead like focusing all your attention on Web3 was huge at the time. And I started to see influencers like Zeniga at the time, you know, tweet about the importance of taking breaks, of stepping back. And then also people like Beanie replying to that and being really toxic and saying, you know, let's not talk about mental health. Like, you need to be hustling all the time. Otherwise, you're just not going to make it. So someone who came from that mental health background, where one of the biggest things I was doing on college campuses was not just providing mental health resources, but really normalizing the idea of self-care and caring for yourself, caring for people around you, making sure you're taking enough breaks was something that could easily be applied to everyone in Web3. And I think that's really what got me super interested. And I kind of started to position myself as a mental health activist and a social impact consultant in the Web3 space, because I wanted to bring in all that knowledge and bring in all that experience and actually just help the space and the people here to just improve their own mental well-being.
Yeah. What would you say are some of the major causes of mental health issues in the Web3 space? Like, I guess, you know, you already mentioned there are a lot of toxic people in the space who, even when people try to talk about taking time for self-care and taking time for your mental health, there are people with large followings on crypto Twitter who will come in and say, like, this stuff doesn't matter. Stop wasting your time on this, you know, just like focus on whatever, like the markets or whatever. And then I also think that like the causes of mental health issues during a bull market and during a bear market are probably quite different as well, right? Where like during a bull market, it's sort of this icy burnout happening like more than anything, where it's just, you're so excited. Everyone's so hyped. Everyone's just working around the clock. And then, you know, you get burnt out. You don't take time for yourself. And then in the bear market, it's kind of like the uncertainty of the future and the slowness of everything, I think, can cause people to maybe be a little bit depressed. So I guess, like, from your view, what do you see as being some of the major causes of mental health issues in the Web3 community?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think you kind of summarized it really well, is that there is a lot of nuance and context required depending on the state of the market and how things are going. I think that's definitely a big factor. But I think overall, you know, I think the basic notion of mental health problems in Web3 can really be summarized to FOMO. I think that's really it, right? Like, whether it's events, for example, that you're unable to attend, and then you see all your internet friends at an event while you might be isolated in some other part of the world, that can lead to a lot of like mental health stress and almost feeling like a social outcast. You know, I know it's happened to me where my friends won't be responding to me while they're all hanging out together at some NFT event in New York while I'm sitting here in London, being like, oh, can you send me a photo, or like, you know, can we FaceTime? Or I think, you know, FOMO when it applies to projects, like we've been seeing since last year when people don't get allow listed for a certain project, but then others do, then suddenly there's a huge uproar and people will start like berating the people who got allow listed or start spewing a lot of like toxicity or conspiracy theories and all that stuff. So that's, again, you know, just an element of FOMO, or it's FOMO can also be applied to the whole idea of unrealized profits. Like, shit, I should have sold that NFT at the all-time high, or shit, I didn't buy enough when the floor was low, or, you know, I sold it too early, like all those things. So I think FOMO is like that overarching kind of term. And then under it, there's so many ways that Web3 suffers mentally. And I think the solution to that really is something I tweet about all the time, is I think we just need to be more empathetic to each other, because we're in this really hyper niche, hyperactive, constantly in overdrive mode space where, you know, like we saw in the past few weeks with this whole FTX stuff, there was constantly news and information being thrown at everyone. There's constantly new projects coming out. There's constantly good actors and bad actors and things coming out about everyone. And I think ultimately the problem is we're in such a hyperdrive space and emotions are always running so high that sometimes we forget that really there's someone real behind the screen, you know? So when you're making these hateful comments or you're making these conspiracies about someone or whatever it might be, there is a person on that receiving end who has real feelings that can get hurt. And I think if we just apply a bit more empathy towards each other and realize that we are still in this niche space where we need to kind of be united to showcase to the world that, yeah, this space is a good place for people to join, I think that empathy can really go a long way in ensuring both longevity and success for Web3.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Another point that I want to call out too, and we were sort of talking about this before we started recording, is this Twitter thread that you put out, I think like a while ago, like maybe a year ago, but it was so good that it still stands out to me almost a year later. So this thread is about politics and NFTs. And basically you're just talking about how we cannot extract politics out of talking about like mental health in, you know, the NFT community and the Web3 community at large. And I just found it to be so well articulated, because this is something that really resonated with me, because at almost every job I've had at Web3 companies, as the content lead, like I'm constantly putting out content for the company and stuff. And a consistent piece of feedback that I've gotten from like every boss I've had is, this is too political. We need to dial this back a little bit. Whether it's content I'm putting out for the company or even from my personal Twitter, you know, I've gotten comments from my bosses about, you know, like, we got to tone this down a little bit. Like, this is political. This is not on topic. We are just talking about crypto and blockchain. We're not talking about politics. We're not in that field. And your thread was like, no, that's wrong. Politics is seeped into all of this, into everything we talk about. And there's no way to extract that out of it. So for anyone who hasn't seen that thread, which is like probably everyone because it was so long ago, can you sort of just give the TLDR about like what that is?
You know, for me, this whole idea of something is too political has always been very incorrect. Or when my friends who come from a certain level of privilege say, I'm not going to vote this year because this just doesn't apply to me. I think all those things are inherently untrue, because there is this misconception that politics is just like high level policies about just high level things that doesn't affect the everyday person, right? But then when you actually dig into it, like you said, politics applies to every realm of our life. It applies to the healthcare we have access to. It applies to the roads that we're driving our cars on, the Ubers that we're taking, you know, all those things are connected to politics in some way, or the privileges that a certain section of society is given, the taxes that we have to pay, like everything is inherently political. So to say that let's not talk about politics or don't bring politics into this is just, it's redundant, because if we want the world around us to be good, if we want the world around us to be supportive of who we are, then politics is involved. And I just wanted to extend that same notion through this thread to Web3 as well, because at some point last year, I started to see a lot of people commenting on how by talking about politics or talking about left or right or conservative, democratic, Republican, all of this stuff, you were ruining the vibes of Web3, right? Like, this was my friends in the Western world complaining about bringing politics into Web3 is ruining the vibes in Web3, because Web3 is all about magic internet money and funny cartoon JPEGs. But then when you think about it, this is, again, a place where politics apply. And we're seeing this play out right now, 1 year later, with this whole FTX thing. Is there was no regulation, there was no oversight on FTX, none of that existed. And so the consumers are the ones who are completely screwed over. And it's because people wanted to be apolitical and separate politics from Web3. So one of the reasons I got into Web3 and Web3 was so attractive to me was because of the idea of decentralization. And I think overall, the space has moved really far away from what true decentralization is all about. You know, the whole idea of decentralization was to give power to the people, for people to be completely in control of their own money, completely in control of their identity, how they transacted, being free from centralized entities. And yet, over this past year, we've gone back to those same centralized power structures. You know, marketplaces are centralized. They'll cut off access to your assets or flag your assets. Exchanges are centralized, like we've seen. They'll completely cut you off from your money and declare bankruptcy. So this is not really true decentralization. And the thing that I also highlighted in that thread was how, more than the Western countries, it's actually developing countries who truly have been able to harness the real power of what Web3 is all about. While we're talking about floor prices and our internet money and our, you know, JPEGs, there are people in developing countries who've actually embraced Web3 to a real extent, because they're the people who have that true distrust of the government and are so sick of corrupted systems that have constantly tried to enslave them and, you know, tried to exploit them. I have friends and family in Latin America, or I have friends and family in Asia who've actually been wronged by the system countless times. And they get Web3 to an extent that a person in the Western world would never get it, because for them, this is actual financial freedom, right? Like, a bank can't just say, no, you don't own your money anymore, or you can't wire transfer this to your relative abroad. Now with crypto, they're doing it. Like, El Salvador is such a good example, and so many other places. And I think that's what I wanted to showcase through that thread, is Web3 is political, because the whole idea of decentralization is actually technically anti-authority. You're telling all those in power to, like, screw you, you know, enough of your centralized control and enough of kind of your dictatorship over how we can operate in the world. We want to take control of our own vessels. And yeah, so I think hopefully more people in the West who have the most vocal voice in Web3 start to realize that and inculcate how they operate and really become good role models, because I think that's how we're going to make sure that there is that more onboarding into the space, more people take the space seriously. But for that, the Western world that does have the most money being transacted in Web3 needs to take that into account as well.
Yeah, 100%. And I also think, at least like the state of our world today, where there are so many political things going on, and these are like extreme political actions being taken that are really affecting people's lives and their mental health. I think, you know, especially in the last couple of years since COVID started, at least like in the US with the people that we've had in power in our country, and just like with the pandemic as well, and how, you know, even COVID has become a political thing where people, you know, don't believe in COVID because like their leaders say they shouldn't believe it or because of whatever. I think in particular in the last couple of years, you really cannot separate politics from any other aspect of your life and your mental health too. And I think being able to openly talk about politics in our Web3 community, I think that will help people have a better time with their mental health, because at least they're able to openly talk about the things that are negatively impacting their day to day. So yeah, I absolutely agree with that.
So obviously the whole like political side is one thing, but then recently I've also seen a lot of conversations being started around gender in the space, for example. You know, there are some amazing community leaders in Web3, like Betty from Dead Fellows, for example, who's been talking about just women being represented in the space and how important that is for women to feel included, for women to be in technical roles, or women to be represented, being paid the same. So that whole idea of gender equality. And yet there are people who are, you know, going against that and sending a lot of hate towards her because they're like, why do you need to bring gender politics into Web3? But again, Web3 is all about equality. It's all about inclusion and accessibility. And if there is someone who has that kind of position in the community, recognizing that there is this almost systemic challenge in the space still, where there are a lack of opportunities for people from certain, you know, communities or genders, and are actually using their platform to talk about it to influence change, and yet that's met with so much hate and negativity. I think those are the things that we as a community really need to be cognizant about and recognize that we have to be there to uplift each other, and we do have to talk about these important issues. We can't just turn a blind eye and say, you know, you're ruining the vibes here by talking about these things. No, because they are important issues, and they are the ones, these are the issues that will make sure that we're ultimately creating a safe space that people actually want to join and take part in.
I'm curious to hear, like, what do you think is a good solution to this? Because like you said, a lot of times when people talk about politics or when they talk about gender equality and these things on crypto Twitter, they're met with a lot of hatred. And even personally, like the most Twitter hate I ever received was like earlier this year when I tweeted something to the effect of like, everyone that works in crypto should be required to listen to like 5 hours of Twitter spaces led by minorities each week or month or whatever I said. And it like welcomed all the trolls. And it wasn't just like, you know, troll accounts with like five followers. They clearly are, you know, open this account just to troll. Like these were, you know, like some names that you called out before, like people with really big followings that got their people on, you know, Inverse Bra was of course involved in a lot of that. And that attracted like all the people that like,
I've been there. I've interfaced with all these crowds.
I'm sure. Yeah. Oh, I'm sure you've been. Yeah. I'm sure you know exactly what I'm talking about. But like my point being, like after that incident, I kind of was like, it kind of shut me up a little bit. Like I kind of was scared to tweet, you know, and especially scared to tweet things like that, that I truly believe in and that I used to tweet about a lot more. I don't really tweet anymore. And like Twitter's not really fun for me anymore because I feel somewhat censored on Twitter just by my own community. And I think, you know, a lot of other people have probably had similar experiences and feel that way. So if all the people that want to talk about these things are being silenced because they're met with so much hatred and anger, what I guess is like the solution other than like get thicker skin and just keep doing it?
Yeah, I mean, I think just like operating on the internet, you need to grow a thick skin, unfortunately, because I think that's both one of the beauties of the internet, but also one of the drawbacks is you'll always be met with diverse opinions. And, you know, oftentimes that diverse opinion also means opinion that goes against what you necessarily believe in. I don't think, you know, for me, I guess this is just like me being really empathetic and coming from that mental health background, but I've never actually believed that anyone is inherently bad, right? Like even when I see people challenging things about gender equality or mental health or politics on the internet, I like try to think about why that might be, right? Like it has so much to do with how people were brought up, the environment they were in, the things they were taught, the things they consumed growing up, like all that becomes ingrained in like part of your kind of DNA. And that's the stuff that you will then, you know, regurgitate online. And I've been guilty of it. Like growing up, I used to say some things that I don't agree with today. And it's only because I engaged in those conversations and healthy discussions, both online and offline with people. And I was like, cool, I'm happy to change my perspective because you've presented me with information that I might not have had access to previously. So I think, you know, when we think about Web3 and all these conversations, it is really a matter of those with that platform, say like all the big influencers and, you know, some of the biggest accounts or some of the most like known voices, actually just talking about these things, because that's how you normalize conversations. Like last year, again, you know, coming back to when Zeneca used to tweet about mental health, I would say 70 to 80% of the comments on it were actually negative and saying, no, let's not talk about mental health. Let's not normalize taking breaks. We need to be grinding in this space. Whereas if he tweets about it today, it'll be met with a lot of people saying, oh yeah, self-care is so important, or touch grass, or I took a break, or, you know, whatever. But you've seen that over this past year, because he was constantly talking about it, and not just him, but me and so many other people came on ease recently, being very vulnerable about his mental health, which I absolutely love, I think. So it's when people in those positions start to normalize those conversations, open up about their mental health struggles. People who look up to those guys will say, cool, like, you know, if someone like that can talk so openly about their mental health, is taking breaks despite all the workload they have, why can't I do it myself? Same thing with, I think, gender equality or politics or whatever it might be, is if people that others look up to can start normalizing those conversations and really using their platform to start talking about it. Sure, on day one, people won't get it. You know, on day one, people who are so ingrained in their processes and way of thinking are going to be against it because to them, it's suddenly like a huge culture shock. But then when you give it enough time and when you consistently talk about it, I think you'll start to see that change come in where people are like, you're just essentially challenging their thinking over time. And maybe it makes them actually curious to learn, curious to do their own research and hopefully change. And again, like, it's not these people's responsibility to drive that change forward. But at the same time, I do think using your platform in a meaningful way is always just such a good thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's very true. I love that. So switching gears a little bit, I do want to talk about SocialFi with you because that's something that you're working on with your new project, Join Circle. Do you call it Join Circle or just Circle?
Join Circle. Yeah. We don't want to get into any trademark.
Okay, cool. That's what I thought, but I wasn't sure. Okay. So Join Circle is essentially like a SocialFi, which to my understanding is social media intersected with finance or decentralized finance specifically. So can you maybe start by just like telling us a little bit about what SocialFi is? It's not really a term that I've heard much of before. And I think maybe a lot of our listeners aren't familiar with it either. So what do you define as SocialFi?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, like some people have put us into like SoFi, SocialFi, all these categories. And I think more so now that we're seeing, and even like DeSo, which is just decentralized social. So there's a few of these categories that we're being put into. I think for us, really, it's, we do kind of relate to SoFi in some sense and DeSo in the other senses, because ultimately our whole goal is to build the ultimate social platform for Web3, right? And when you look at Web3, it's not just NFT projects. We want to look at the Web3 ecosystem as a whole. So we want to look at people building decentralized technologies. We want to look at NFT projects. We want to look at DAOs. We want to look at DeFi protocols and really try to become a home for everyone. And so there's elements of us as a social platform that actually coincide with DeFi protocols. So we might have some tooling and some really interesting features that DeFi protocols can use. And we're having some conversations with them to actually inculcate those ideas. So that kind of taps into that whole SoFi angle. We're talking to DAOs to build governance solutions that can help more decentralized actions take place through the platform. So that taps into like the whole DeSo side of things. But ultimately for us, you know, it's just a matter of building a social platform that we as co-founders would want to use ourselves.
Yeah. And what does that look like? I'm curious because we have, you know, like Twitter, Telegram, Discord yeah. today, and it's also disjointed and it's also chaotic. But, you know, like everybody is like, we need a new social platform. We need like a solution to all of this. But no one really has a very clear, at least that I've spoken with, has a very clear vision for what that actually looks like. So can you sort of walk us through like, what's your vision for Join Circle and what does this new social platform look like to you?
Sure. Yeah. So for us, right, my co-founder, Sean, and I, we're actually first cousins who've grown up together since we were literally like babies in our diapers. Like we've known each other our whole lives. And when we went to college as well, I went to Binghamton, he went to Cornell, upstate New York, 40 minutes from each other. So throughout college as well, we were constantly hanging out with each other over the weekends. And we actually built a lot of really cool things when we were in college. And then we graduated, both of us went into really traditional corporate careers. And then last year, we both ran into visa issues in the United States. And I had to actually leave the US to move to London because of visa issues. And Ishan ended up going back to school at Cornell again to like help with all the visa stuff we were facing. So at the time, it was really like FaceTime, Twitter, and Discord were how we continued to stay in touch, living in two different countries now. And over time, you know, because we were both in Web3 at that point, we were both starting to join a lot of different communities and servers on Discord. Just over time, we started to run into a lot of challenges that we started to face on Discord. At the same time, we also started seeing people who are just joining Web3, all the way to people like Gary Vee, who've obviously like been in the space for a while, complaining about all the issues that they were facing with Discord. We were starting to see a lot of like people lose their assets because of hacks and, you know, a lot of like spam bots. So there was just like a ton of issues that we were constantly being met with. And as people who came from that background of just being super entrepreneurial, being super innovative, and we just love like building stuff, Ishan and I just said, you know, is there something that we could do here? So I started sketching some designs last year, I think around like November, December, and then, you know, sent it to him. And I was like, cool, let's try to like see what we could do. So we built some initial designs and, you know, we started teasing it to the community and saying, is this something that people want? And we were just met with such a positive response from everyone. And over this past year, like especially over the last 6 months, we've really been able to organically, through the sneak peeks we've shared online, through the conversations we've had with different NFT projects and communities, showcase that, yes, there is a need and people do want a better social platform that's not just a replacement for Discord, but actually something that's completely new and offers all the native kind of solutions and tools that Web3 people need. So when it comes to the vision, I think Join Circle now is, initially it was just supposed to be a Discord competitor, Discord replacement with all the same chat, voice, video, super basic features. But I think over the course of the past year, just kind of ideating and iterating with different teams and feedback and some of our friends and network that we've showcased our product designs to, it's evolved into something much more, where now we're calling it the ultimate social platform for Web3. So obviously it's going to have all the Discord features, but then we're also inculcating ways to have social feeds. Like I said, you know, governance for Web3 communities, project launchpad, so people can actually like highlight new communities that are launching using NFTs or Web3, aggregated announcements, so you could see all announcements right on the homepage from different communities to minimize your burden of going into like 100 different servers one by one. Yeah, so tons of features. You know, we're doing like stuff for digital identity. We're building a multi-chain platform, so it's not just going to be Ethereum focused. And it's really, again, like that's kind of what we have today as our vision. But I'm sure as Web3 continues to evolve, so will we. We don't just want to build something and then let it ride for 10 years. I think our goal is really to keep building just fun stuff that we, like I said earlier, like we as co-founders just want to use, and things that we believe would enhance our own experience, and then just be able to share that with the rest of the community.
Okay, I think that's all super cool. And I have a lot of follow-up questions for you. The first one is, how do you think about decentralization when you're building out Join Circle? So we've seen, you know, different products that are out right now. Like I would say the most popular right now are probably Lens and Farcaster as far as, you know, decentralized social goes. And I think those two projects take a slightly different approach, where we always hear Dan talking about, you know, sufficiently decentralized, where he doesn't think everything has to be fully decentralized. Yeah, it just has to be like decentralized enough. Whereas Lens, I think, takes more of like a, you know, everything has to be on chain. Every post you ever make is going to be on chain, like all of these things. So with Join Circle, are you like a fully decentralized maxi, or are you more in like the sufficiently decentralized camp?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, also, like, you know, big shout out to the teams at Lens and Farcaster. I think what they're building is something really cool. And we often get asked as well if you view them or anyone else as competitors. But I think ultimately, one, we don't. And two, it's because I think this space is still so nascent. There's enough room for everyone to grow, especially when you're doing something that's truly unique and something that truly is supportive of the community. You know, I think there's room for a lot of people to come into this space. And we actually, a large part of our community is also like part of Lens, for example. Like we could see it because they have the Lens emojis in their like name. So when they follow us, I'm like, cool, more people coming from the Lens community, you know? So I love that kind of mutual interest in the social space for Web3 among people. I think that's cool. And then when it comes to the question of being decentralized, I do agree with Dan's take. I think that whole idea of sufficient decentralization is a really interesting one. For us at Join Circle, coming from that product background, and this is something I've actually written a thread on as well, but I strongly believe that with Web3, because of how early we are, there is room to be centralized when you start and decentralized as you grow. And I think that's the approach that we ideally have in mind for Join Circle as we continue to build out is at the start, you want to be a super agile platform and you want to be able to build very quickly. You want to be able to introduce features, craft features, you know, play around with it because you're super early, you're day one, you're just building out. I think if you're relying on governance and approval from the community, it just slows down that process a bit to be able to iterate quickly. So I think for the start, we want to be that centralized entity, but at the same time, we're creating the solution and we're creating the tooling that can allow decentralized communities to also thrive on the platform. But I think as time goes on, down the line a few years from now, we want to be able to create this decentralized value proposition, especially for everyone who's been part of the Join Circle journey in some way, and create some sort of incentives and rewards and essentially like giving back to the community. That's been a big part of our whole like ethos and building out, and have them actually be able to say, okay, what else can we do with this platform? How do we get more involved? I think that's ultimately the goal. And I think for us, and I read this in my thread as well, but one model that I personally really love to see was actually the ENS one. So ENS started as kind of a centralized entity, just selling these ENS names for a long time. And then last year, was it early this year? Time's a mess. But I think, you know, they did the whole token airdrop and then they suddenly switched to this like DAO-based governance model where people were now in charge of how ENS progresses. And that to me was amazing because they were able to build out their brand. They were able to build out the infrastructure as a centralized entity that didn't have to necessarily look at too many places before creating things. And then they could decentralize and give value back to those who believed in them and supported them from the start. So I think like a hybrid model of all those different elements is something that we hope to take. But ultimately, like you know from this conversation, I'm hugely passionate about Web3 and about community and decentralization. So there's definitely elements that we keep thinking about on how we can just continue to reward everyone that's part of our community.
Very cool. Very cool. And then the other question I had in mind about Join Circle is I've heard a lot of people talk about how Web3 doesn't need a tool that does it all. We just need more integrations amongst tools. So projects should focus on sort of like the one thing they do best and then work with other projects and integrate their products. And I think we've kind of seen that in the past with social media too, is that, you know, like the most popular social media platforms in Web2 today sort of like have their own lane. Like Instagram is its own thing. Twitter is its own thing. And when they try to cross over, like when Twitter had their, I don't even remember what they called it, basically like Instagram stories, but on Twitter.
Yeah.
What was it called?
Fleets.
Yeah. Like that apparently wasn't successful and they ended up getting rid of that. So it seems too like when social platforms try to copy one another or try to like integrate other platforms' features that it ends up flopping most of the time. So I'm just curious how you would respond to like people who, you know, have that belief that, you know, a product should just do one thing really well, focus on integrations instead of having like a one size fits all kind of solution.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a really fair point, right? We're kind of going down that route building Join Circle because obviously, there's things that we want to build ourselves. You know, we don't want people to rely on Collabland and Verify bots. We want people to be able to natively on our platform authenticate their assets, be able to do whatever they do on other social platforms. But then there's also elements of our vision that we might not be the best people to actually carry out. You know, we want to do digital identity solutions, for example. And there are some amazing players out there, like Disco, for example, that are doing some really interesting things with their data backpack and their other tools doing some other cool things for on-chain credentials. So our goal is really to reach out to those players and see how we can work together. And because I think that's really our goal is we don't want to necessarily do everything ourselves and start competing with everyone in the industry. We actually want to see how we can elevate all the different ecosystems and protocols and solutions and tech being built in this space and say, hey, look, we'll bring you that customer base. Come work with us. Let's, you know, find ways to integrate, find ways to work together so we can continue to do a lot of good for this space. I think that's our ultimate goal. While obviously we're going to be building a ton of native things ourselves, I think to grow sustainably, it's all about collaboration. And that's actually one of the key pillars of Web3 as well, is how we as a community, you know, continue to grow together instead of against each other.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the last thing I wanted to ask you about, and this is something that I realize I've asked almost every VC who's been on the podcast, but I've never asked any of the founders, is kind of like the founder's perspective of that fundraising process for their project. And something interesting that you've said before is that fundraising in this space as a quote unquote outsider has been kind of challenging for you. So I guess, first of all, like, what do you mean by outsider? How do you define that? And I'd love to hear more about your experiences.
Sure. Yeah, we're actually fundraising at this point, so in the hopes of not pissing off any VCs that might listen to this. You know, I think just as when I say outsiders, I just mean people who aren't connected to the traditional VC and investing world. You know, I don't have any family members or friends who work at a big VC. I don't have any really close friends who might have raised really large rounds from different VCs. And as someone who has no connections to the VC world and has to actually like beg, borrow, steal for intros to people, it is really challenging because, I mean, we've seen over this past year, there are a lot of products that have raised a lot more money than we've gone to market, like we were asking for, with a lot less than we have. Like, we have now crossed 90,000 signups for our early access to the platform. We've, you know, 30 plus communities signed up, totaling to over 300,000 plus potential members that could be joining Circle. And yet when we go to some VCs, they'll tell us you don't have enough traction or you don't have enough interest, but then they've also led 30, 40, 50 million rounds in companies that might have like 100 to 500 signups, right? So I just think that the barriers to entry and barriers to access are a lot higher if you're not very well connected into the ecosystem. The other challenge that we've faced is we are still pre-product. And the reason that we're trying to raise funding is so we could actually launch our product successfully, because it is like a platform that requires infrastructure costs and things like that. So we go to a lot of VCs that claim they're super early stage or, you know, idea stage or whatever, but then we have these conversations and then they'll tell us, oh, you're too early for us. You know, come back when you've built your product and launched it, or come back when you have some like revenue. And again, I think that like defeats the purpose of being an early stage investor. If you have founders coming to you that are early stage that need help and are not finding that right support. So that's why, you know, I've tweeted about this openly. It's just as an outsider, it is difficult. And I really do hope that that's something that changes, because I personally know there's tons of really, really good people building really, really cool things, both inside and outside of Web3, that just never find the right support and the right resources to be able to bring it to fruition, because they might not come from a certain level of privilege or a certain level of connectivity to these audiences. And so just have such a hard time actually ever being able to convey their passion to these people.
Yeah, I've asked this question a lot to VCs I've had on the podcast. Like, what are VCs thinking when they fund pre-product startups with so much money? Like, they have literally nothing to show. Like, they haven't proved out why you should give them any money at all. Yet you're just throwing, you know, not just millions, but tens of millions, sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars at them pre-prod before they've done anything. And the answer I get most of the time is that they are making a bet on the founder based on the founder's history, what they know about the founder, things like that, which, you know, like sort of hearing what you just said now, kind of sounds like code for they're connected, they have personal connections, and that's why they trust the people
Your words.
Yeah, no, you didn't say that. That's my interpretation. And then I think on top of that, too, it probably doesn't help that we're in a bear market now. you know.
I mean, 100%. I think that's been like a big conversation as well. Is a lot of people who reached out to us actually themselves to say, look, what you're building is really cool. Would love to chat about investing. Are you raising? And then once we had this conversation, suddenly they were like, yeah, we're kind of slowing down our investments because of the market. And so I think it's a never ending thing. But yeah, I mean, my hopes are just that people do start to recognize that there are a lot of first time founders who might deserve that shot more than, say, a repeated failed founder, for example. And I, you know, we see that all the time, like a lot of people who've blown up billions with just stupid mistakes will get second and third and fourth chances a lot of times. But then a first-time founder who does have something truly amazing that they've been working on just never even get that first shot. So I think some sort of leveling of the playing field definitely needs to happen.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Totally agree. All right. Well, Zetvik, I like to end every podcast episode with a few fun questions. Some of these have to do with crypto and some of these don't. And so, and I ask the same questions to every guest. And so the playing field is leveled. It's a fair game. the first question I have for you is, you get to rebrand any one thing in Web3 and it's guaranteed to stick. What do you want to rebrand?
Oh my God, I love that question. I would want to rebrand Super Rare to actually becoming less of a curated marketplace and more of a curated, kind of like a dictionary of artists, where people can actually learn about artists, where they come from, what they do, and, you know, help that improve the buying experience.
Why just Super Rare? Why not like another NFT marketplace?
Because I think Super Rare has the right collection of collectors that look at the place, and I think these are the people who have the most buying power to actually elevate artists. But I think by making it less selling oriented curation and more just artist stories oriented curation, it really will bring in a lot of success for the artists that get involved.
I love that idea, and hopefully somebody from Super Rare is listening and they'll say that. Also, I think somebody else said Super Rare too as their answer to this question. Now I have to go back and look, because yeah, that's kind of like a not what you would immediately expect kind of thing. Okay, second question. If you could wave a magic wand and any Web3 app, tool, or protocol would immediately exist, what would you want that to be?
Join Circle. 100%.
Okay, fine. You can't say Join Circle. Yeah, you can't say Join Circle. Name any other one.
Interesting. So anything that like I just want should exist in the space?
Yeah, it can be an app, it can be a protocol, it can be like whatever. Anything Web3.
I think something that reduces the cost barriers for people in developing countries. That's something I've tweeted about a lot, I've spoken about a lot, is like our gas fees that super normalize spending like hundreds of dollars in Western countries on NFT things is someone's like monthly salary in developing countries. So finding a way to actually like minimize that cost, whether that's a DeFi protocol that comes up or an NFT marketplace only exclusively dealing with like really cheaply priced things for developing countries, I think would be an awesome thing to increase access.
Yeah, or just covering gas costs, or maybe like adjusting gas costs depending on what country they're from, right? I think that would be a fair thing too.
Or like even price lighters, like if like Web2 companies can do it to price their products in different countries according to buying power in those countries, why not NFT projects selling at different price points across the world?
That's a very good point. That's so true. Third question. If Join Circle were a famous person or animal or character from history or pop culture, who would it be?
Ooh, wow, that's such a good question. Oh my God.
I know, this one's a little bit out there.
I don't know, I'd want to say like some famous artist, like that's like not hopefully questionable or cancelable in some way.
I was going to say, all the ones that come top of mind, I'm like, sure they were all there.
I don't know, probably like someone like Salvador Dali or Monet that like had a profound impact on their like ecosystems and their communities while also just being like really sick to, you know, like one of the things I really focus on as someone who does all our branding and socials for Join Circle is like having that kind of air of almost like mystery and really clean like designs and color schemes going. So that's why I like immediately went to some historic artist who's a bit like mysterious and a bit like focused on the art and community side of things. Yeah. So whoever it might have been, I guess the listeners can decide who the right artist is for that bill.
Nice. Choose your own adventure. Let's make it Mad Lib style. I like it. Okay. Next question is, if you knew that you were financially set for the rest of your life and you could just do whatever you want, what would you be doing with your life?
Oh, that's the dream.
Yeah.
I think it'd be a mix of like traveling the world and doing philanthropy. Like that's why I'm trying to get rich, honestly. It's like the biggest goal I have when I get rich is like retire my parents. But then besides that, it's literally like since I was a kid in India, like stopping at traffic lights and seeing like homeless people or like people begging for money, it was always just like, how do I help this not exist anymore? You know, so I think it would definitely be philanthropy. But then I've also, since I was a kid, really enjoyed traveling, experiencing new cultures, cuisines, all of that. So it'd have to be like philanthropy and travel, basically.
Nice. I like it. Okay. And then last question, if you could live anywhere in the world, where would you live? And I know you just said you like to travel. And so it's totally fair if your answer is I wouldn't live anywhere. I would like live in multiple places, or I would be completely nomadic or whatever.
Well, I do have a dream retirement destination.
Okay. Perfect.
It's Florence, 100%. Florence, Italy. I would retire there in a heartbeat.
Nice. I haven't been there. No, I've been like a lot of like all over Italy, but not Florence. So yeah, what is it about Florence that you love?
So I went to Florence in 2019. I was actually invited to speak at a UNICEF conference on young people's mental health. And I was there for 10 days. Honestly, the most beautiful trip of my life. Like, it's just such a beautiful city. Like, there's so many just like I felt like I was in a dream, basically. And people are super nice. The food and everything is great. You just walk around, you know, have a panini, have a glass of wine in the afternoon, like just take in all the beautiful sights. And it's just such a wonderful experience.
That's awesome. That is the life. I love it. All right. Well, thank you so much, Satvik, for taking the time.
This has honestly been like such an amazing experience. And I do appreciate both you and the community that's voted me in. So really excited.
Last thing, Satvik, before you go, tell people where they can find you if they want to follow you and your awesome tweets, which also I've said so many times on this podcast that I hate Twitter threads, and I've like roasted David Phelps for his long Twitter threads because I hate reading them. But yeah. I have to say, your Twitter threads are good. I
Thank
like
you.
Your Twitter threads. So
sure
I don't
David's
say this
are great
to many
well.
People. No, David's threads suck. You. Don't go read them. Yours are great though. So keep writing them. I will keep reading them. But where can people find you on Twitter? And then where can people go to check out Join Circle, maybe like sign up for a waitlist or beta or whatever you guys have going on?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm on Twitter and Instagram. If you just search Southwick Sati, you'll be able to find me. And Join Circle is also on Twitter and Instagram at Join Circle XYZ. And then if you go to joincircle.xyz, you'll be able to sign up for early access to our platform. And yeah, I think that's everything I have to promote.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We'll include all of that in the show notes as well to make it easy for people to find. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in as always. And we'll be back again next Thursday with another episode of Rehash.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Rehash, a Web3 podcast. Satvik Sethi was nominated and voted onto the podcast by Caden. Rehash is hosted by Diana Chen, produced and edited by Ellie Dots and Tyler Internet, sponsored by Lens, Avenue, and Govern, and as always, supported by Rehash DAO. To stay up to date on all things Rehash, you can follow us on Twitter at RehashWeb3, on Lens at Rehash.Lens, and join our Discord to get involved.